Welcome to SCOTUScast, Cigarette Labeling Post Decision Edition. Thanks for tuning in. On Monday, December 15th, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Altria Group v. Good, the first case in which it had heard oral argument in the October 2008 term. In this case, the Supreme Court considered whether federal law preempted, either expressly or impliedly, state law fraud claims regarding statements made in cigarette advertising and authorized by the Federal Trade Commission. In a 5-4 decision, the court held that federal law does not expressly, and neither do various FTC decisions impliedly, preempt such challenges, thereby allowing a suit against the tobacco company to go forward. To discuss the decision, we bring back, from our post-argument podcast on this case, University of Illinois Professor of Law Andrew Morris. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Morris.
Hi, and welcome to another SCOTUScast from the Federalist Society. I'm Andrew Morris, the H. Ross and Helen Workman Professor of Law and Business at the University of Illinois, and a senior scholar at the Mercatus Center at George Mason, and a senior fellow at the Property and Environment Research Center in Bozeman, Montana. We're going to talk today about the Supreme Court's 5-4 decision in Altria Group versus Good, an opinion issued on December 15, 2008. Altria Group involved claims by a group of smokers of light cigarettes made by the respondents, Philip Morris and its parent, who sued under the Maine Unfair Trade Practices Act, claiming that the cigarette manufacturers had fraudulently advertised their cigarettes as delivering less tar and nicotine than regular cigarettes, when in fact the light cigarettes did not deliver less tar and nicotine due to various compensating behaviors by the smokers, which were known to the manufacturers. The district court in the case had granted summary judgment for the petitioners, holding that these claims were preempted by the Federal Cigarette Labeling and Advertising Act of 1968. And the First Circuit Court of Appeals had reversed, finding no preemption. And then the tobacco company as parent asked the Supreme Court to take the case on the preemption issue. In a 5-4 decision by Justice Stevens, with a dissent authored by Justice Thomas, the Supreme Court held for the respondents, the plaintiffs, and allowed the case to go forward on the plaintiffs' claims. There are about 40 similar suits currently pending with billions in total claims, and there will undoubtedly be quite a few more filed now that the path to doing so is clear, both in the tobacco area and in other areas. The facts of the case are straightforward, but they're important because this is likely to set off a wave of suits against Philip Morris and other tobacco companies, and so let me summarize them briefly. The plaintiff's claim is essentially this. When Philip Morris designed its light cigarettes, it did so in a way that meant that those cigarettes did not actually deliver less tar and nicotine, despite being marketed as doing so. For example, the filters on light cigarettes typically have small holes roughly at the place where a smoker would hold the cigarette. The plaintiffs alleged that this was done deliberately so that when the cigarette was placed into the smoking machine that the federal government uses to test tar and nicotine levels, air would flow into the filter, mixing with the smoke and cutting the tar and nicotine content. While when the cigarette was smoked by a person, the smoker's fingers would cover the holes, allowing the smoker to get more tar and nicotine per puff than the machine measured. There were other similar claims about other aspects of the design of the cigarettes, but you get the general idea. The reason such a claim turned into a Supreme Court opinion is that in 1965, Congress passed a statute regulating cigarette advertising, which it later amended again in 1969. The Federal Cigarette Labeling and Advertising Act, or FCLAA, required the familiar warnings on cigarette packages that we see today and also regulated the advertising of cigarettes, generally in a way that most analysts today think benefited the incumbent tobacco companies by making it harder for new companies to break into cigarette sales through advertising. In any event, the FCLAA expressly preempted states from requiring inconsistent labels that include additional warnings not required by the federal government, and also, in Section 5B, stated that no requirement or prohibition based on smoking and health shall be imposed under state law with respect to the advertising or promotion of any cigarettes, the packages of which are labeled in conformity with the provisions of this chapter. Now, Philip Morris and its parent, Altria Group, argued that this language in Section 5B preempted claims under the State Unfair Trade Practices Act, since a finding for the plaintiffs would essentially mean that there was a claim based on smoking and health, on the link between smoking and health. In other words, that the plaintiff's claim depended on their harm being caused by the fact that getting more tar and nicotine than they had anticipated getting from the light cigarettes must be due to the relationship between smoking and health. The case is important for two reasons. First, it settles, for now at least, a long-running controversy over how state law interacts with federal law and consumer lawsuits. And second, it opens a new front in the tobacco wars. Now, Justice Stevens assembled a majority, including Justices Kennedy, Souter, Ginsburg, and Breyer, to turn his plurality opinion from the 1992 case of Cipollone versus Liggett Group into federal law. Cipollone had been a 4-3-2 opinion, and courts have had a lot of trouble figuring out what the conflicting approaches in those opinions meant for the law. And now we know. The general rule that emerges from this case is that federal laws will be narrowly read with respect to their preemption of overlapping state laws, so that if Congress expects to preempt state laws in the future, it will have to be much more explicit about doing so than it has been historically. This is bad news for those businesses that have used federal regulation as a shield against state-level regulation. Some of those bargains are now going to be reinterpreted to allow both state and federal regulation instead of just federal regulation. And that was certainly what everyone thought the FCLAA meant in the 1960s, when it was roundly denounced by any smoking activists. In particular, this case is bad news for tobacco companies who are going to get sued like crazy over these type of claims. Now, there are two main problems with Justice Stevens' opinion. The first is that it's a bad analysis of the FCLAA. The statute says quite straightforwardly that no requirement or prohibition based on smoking and health is allowed to be imposed by the states. And a claim that light cigarettes provided more tar and nicotine than advertised is clearly a claim that depends on the relationship between smoking and health under any sort of normal English language reading of the words, and so it should be preempted. Justice Stevens dodged this point by focusing on the general nature of the main statute, which says nothing about smoking or health, but instead creates a general duty not to deceive. In his dissent, Justice Thomas, joined by Justices Alito and Scalia and the Chief Justice, challenged Justice Stevens on his expansion of the Cipollone plurality opinion into the law governing preemption. Justice Thomas said, and quoting him directly, "The court today elects to convert the Cipollone plurality opinion into binding law, notwithstanding its weakened doctrinal foundation, its atextual construction of the statute, and the lower court's inability to apply its methodology. The resulting confusion about the nature of a claim's predicate duty and inevitable disagreement in the lower courts as to what type of representations are material and misleading will have the perverse effect of increasing the non-uniformity of state regulation of cigarette advertising, the exact problem that Congress intended Section 5B to remedy." So what Justice Thomas is saying here is that the Cipollone plurality opinion authored by Justice Stevens has been justly criticized in the legal literature and has been the subject of great deal of confusion in the lower courts, and that's just going to get worse after this opinion. And Justice Thomas went on to point out that, quote, "Respondents' claims seek to impose liability on the petitioners because of the effect that smoking light cigarettes had on their health. The alleged misrepresentation here, that light or low-tar cigarettes are not as healthy as advertised, is actionable only because of the effect that smoking light and low-tar cigarettes had on respondents' health. Otherwise, any alleged misrepresentation about the effect of the cigarettes on health would be immaterial for the purposes of the MUTPA and would not be the source of the injuries that provided the impetus for the class action lawsuit." And then Justice Thomas went on to say, "Because the proper test for preemption is to look at the factual basis of a complaint to determine if a claim imposes a requirement based on smoking and health, there is no meaningful distinction to be drawn in this case between common law failure to warn claims and claims under the MUTPA." Now, wearing my law professor hat, I would say that Justice Thomas has the better argument in this case. His analysis is typically lucid and straightforward and makes a great deal more sense than Justice Stevens' much more convoluted approach. And indeed, if you listen to my earlier SCOTUS cast on this case, you may recall that I thought Altria had a pretty good shot at winning the case because the oral argument revealed a great deal of skepticism on the part of virtually everyone except Justice Stevens on the plaintiff's preemption argument, with the justices asking very hard questions of the plaintiff's lawyers and not getting particularly good answers in general. And I wasn't the only one who thought that. There were multiple predictions of a 7-2 or 9-0 win for Altria. So, why did Justice Stevens get a majority here? I think there are two things going on that help explain the outcome. First, the FCLAA is a rare regulatory statute that involves an unpopular industry engaged in unpopular activity and is itself almost universally seen as a particularly nasty instance of legislative log rolling by special interests. The court didn't discuss this legislative history, but it's unlikely the members weren't aware of it. For the more results-oriented members of the court, like Justices Ginsburg and Breyer, that may well have been a factor. Second, the swing votes here were Justices Kennedy and Souter. They had not joined Justice Stevens' plurality opinion in Cipollone, but instead had joined a concurrence by Justice Blackmun. Stevens brought them on board this time, persuading them to endorse the approach from his plurality opinion in Cipollone. So what persuaded them? It's hard to say, since neither one of them wrote separately, but again, the unstated backstory of the FCLAA may have led them to be reluctant to allow the tobacco companies to use the statute to shield their behavior. So Justice Thomas wrote a better opinion, but Justice Stevens got 5 votes, and Justice Thomas only got 4. And with any Supreme Court appointments made in the next 4 years more likely to be similar to Justice Stevens than Justice Thomas, I don't think we'll see a change in the preemption rules anytime soon. So wearing my lawyer hat, what's in store as a result of this opinion? Well, lots more litigation. This is not just throwing the barn door open. It's tearing down the barn walls and letting all the horses out. There's going to be a lot more litigation, clearly against tobacco companies, who are going to get sued a lot over light cigarettes by lawyers anxious to collect fees on some big judgments. But lots of other deep-pocketed defendants are going to get sued, too, as they discover that the bargains they thought they had struck to trade federal regulation for protection against state regulators and plaintiffs' lawyers are not as durable as they might have thought. So maybe there's a lesson there that striking a deal with the devil sometimes leaves you in trouble. And that's it for this edition of SCOTUSCast.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.